Hello, Sunlit Ones. My name is Tyler.
And my name is Brooke.
And this is Cosmere Conversations. Welcome back, all of you lovely listeners. We are continuing the Sunlit Man book club, this time exploring, who are those Threnodites? What are they doing on Canticle? Last time we talked all about the planet itself, the way that investiture was working, and kind of some theorizing about what's going on with that kind of electric vibe of the planet Canticle. But now we need to talk about its inhabitants, because most of them are not from Canticle. They are not Canticleites by birth.
Correct. But they are Canticleites by presence, I suppose.
Yeah, and over enough time, when does that line begin to fade? When do the people from Ashen, who come over the humans Voidbringers, when do they eventually become Risharn? When does the tones begin to merge of a person's spirit web?
That's a good question. That's a very philosophical question.
Yeah, right from the top.
I think that as soon as you have a generation that never lived on Threnodite, they are Canticleites.
I think that's completely fair. Very American of you to just be like, birthright, you born here, you're an American. That's how
basically.
It works. And it may be the same for Canticle, but we see Nomad turning into Zellian. Part of that is a acceptance and a change in his own spirit web and his own vibe in the Cosmere. So we also know that it's possible to kind of like force that situation. It's not only being born on the planet, but it also is the circumstances
true.
As well.
Yeah, and has to do with your connection with other people, and that connection, that community is actually a big part of, I think, what defines this particular group of Threnodites. Maybe what we see with these Canticleites can tell us something about Threnodites in general, even the people that are still on Threnody. There are still so many gaps in our knowledge where Threnody and its magic and its people are concerned. But this story, The Sunlit Man, gave us actually a lot of additional information and background on the Threnodites, Threnody, what has happened, and what may be the state of that system, both in the past and currently. Still a lot of holes, but fewer holes than there were before.
We love when Brandon is able to answer some of those questions that years ago he raffoed, and now he's starting to supply the reading material for us all.
Exactly. So let's start by talking a little bit about the history of these people and their exodus, their travel from Threnody to Canticle. How did they make that journey? Why did they make that journey?
As a quick refresher, the Threnodite system is not a shard system.
It currently.
Has not currently a shard system. And we know that in its past, before Shadows for Silence in the Forest of Hells, there was a cataclysmic event where a shard was killed in the
Threnodite.
Ambition. Yes.
Yes. Ambition was shattered by Odium in the Threnodite system.
And we know that that caused some of the chaos that we see on Threnody with the Shades. We think that there may be some similarities to what happened on Sel with Devotion and Dominion, where the vessels were killed, leaving the shard power to kind of swirl and break in the cognitive realm. We assume that there's some similarity in the Threnodite system.
I don't know. I think we still have too many questions to be able to say any of that. I think it's probably something different than what happened on Sel, just for variety's sake in the Cosmere. And I don't know if we can really say what all of the correlation and causation is between this shard event and whatever is happening on the planet of Threnody.
Well, what we do know from Shadows of Silence is that there was an exodus from one continent to another continent, or one land area to another land area, to escape
the evil. And then they come to the continent where there are shades. Unclear if the evil is related in any way to the shades. Again, we just have way too many holes in our knowledge. We know that there was a migration on Threnody itself. They have now landed in this place where there are shades. And then some indeterminate amount of time after that, these Canticleites originally left. So we hear from the greater good, quote, "We came from another world, chased by an ancient force known as the evil."
"It's still there," he said, "on your home world. I've seen it. Well, the manifestations of it. Wild, unchained investiture come to life with its own alien will, forming mountain-sized figures with impossible, unnerving features and unknowable motivations," end quote.
And that's the first description we've ever had of the evil, which is a crazy description.
Yeah, it definitely seems akin to the stone creatures from Rashar that, you know, eventually we see on display in Oathbringer, but kind of, you know, mythical in a way, or beyond belief. You have kind of the normal things going on with like the fused, but then there's also these beings and these creatures, and in this case, these evil, these mountain-sized figures that are, you know, able to cause a bunch of destruction, leading to an exodus from continent to continent, but also it seems an exodus from the planet itself. And we don't know how many people fled and in what directions they fled. There could be other enclaves of Threnodite people throughout the Cosmere.
I think that is safe to assume. They left the planet actually not even because of the evil, which is what we probably would have thought, but their actual, at least their perceived or remembered or stated reason for leaving is that they left because there was too much infighting among the people. Everyone was arguing. There was a lot of conflict, a lot of hatred. And so this specific group fled, decided to leave the planet because there was just too much conflict happening. When they left, then there was even more arguing and conflict within that group of immigrants, or emigrants, I suppose, in this case. Mm-hmm. And that group then split further. These people that we meet who have landed on Canticle are a splinter group from that original group, and they broke off following a priest of Adenalsium, who they call their original Lodestar, and that is the person who led them specifically to Canticle.
Yeah, multiple things going on as you're talking about the group that splintered off, further splintered.
Yeah.
And then we know that they are going to splinter again into, at minimum, all of the different tribes on Canticle.
On Canticle, right.
But then, of course, there's the clear splinter between the Cinder King and his followers, you know, be they forced or not, and the quote unquote free people of Canticle. So there's just a bunch of splintering going on at seemingly every level. And it begins, I think that, as you pointed out, it's not directly to escape the evil. It's to escape the infighting that's going on in their society.
And that might be due to the evil. Exactly. Right? Like, I think because they are under so much pressure, it's causing all of this tension within the population, which is interesting to then compare to the Canticleites, who we've even got a quote here, I'll see if I can find it, about how the pressure that they are under actually draws them together and brings about their really beautiful sense of community and support.
Yeah, let's go over to that bit from the text. Quote, "In many places, a struggle for survival brought out people's most brutal aspects. Yet among this group, he saw something remarkable. Was it possible that being forced to always move, being forced to work together for survival, had forged them into a society that didn't have time to kill one another? That perhaps this planet had created people who weren't weak, that sun surely would not abide weakness, but who also valued life? End quote. A very interesting concept and theme that Brandon has been playing around with. I go back to our other secret project, not Cosmere, but Frugal Wizard's Handbook. You had Cephawin and Aelstyn from a war-torn tribal society, you know, based on the Norse cultures, but they looked at in awe the society that John was from, you know, seemingly in their future, but that's not actually how the process worked, where people were able to live in a harmony in these large apartment buildings or apartment complexes with hundreds or even thousands of individuals that didn't constantly break down into fighting. And that's a little bit what we have here with the Threnodites. You know, there was a bigger group that was subject to a lot of infighting, and it basically got chiseled away until you're left with the group of eventual Canticleites who are able to change around the system. And it's not all that dissimilar from what's going on in the Skyward series, although we're not spoiling that as much and as obvious. That also deals with an exodus of humans into space.
Yeah, and Ox goes as far as to say that these people are an entire offshoot culture. So I think it's safe to say that these people really are Canticleites, not Threnodites, because their whole culture, their way of being, their way of governing, you know, the identity of their nation is quite different from the Threnodites.
And we should assume that one of those differences is probably in the form of their religion, because they speak about ad nauseum as their god and their creator.
Which is actually the entire reason that this particular group split away from the original group of emigrants, their faith in ad nauseum.
Yes. So the original Lodestar, as they named him, could also be maybe considered something of like a prophet, taking the people in a different direction, following ad nauseum rather than whatever was going on.
Who is the Lodestar? Who is the original Lodestar? Do you have any ideas?
I don't, because yeah. I don't think that it's someone obvious like Silence Divine. I don't feel like that makes a whole bunch of sense.
No, I don't. Like, maybe it's a world hopper is my thought. We've never seen ad nauseum worship before in the Cosmere, not explicitly. We have talked before about how we've heard multiple references to a god beyond, which sort of seems to be this general catch-all term for maybe an overarching god that I've always sort of assumed was a reference to ad nauseum, but we've never had it explicitly stated like this. And I am just so curious about who this Lodestar is, who brought the worship of ad nauseum to Threnody, why Threnody
was this place that was kind of a ripe for the introduction of a religion, because obviously you have chaos, you have an incredible amount of societal discomfort and strife.
Sure.
And then someone maybe drops in and is like a zazed in Mistborn Era One, just like, have you heard about the gospel of ad nauseum?
But it's also, I think, pretty difficult to get to Threnody. So maybe this is a vestige of a time before the evil. You know, like, we have no idea. This small group of ad nauseum worshippers may have been around for a long time, sort of in the shadows, in the background. It might have been a really small group of people, even during the time of silence. We just don't know, but it is fascinating. And Nomad noticed this as well, saying, quote, ad nauseum, eh? Nomad said. By the way, how'd a bunch of Threnodites end up worshipping the father god of an entirely different planet?
We learned before our accidents, Confidence said. We were those who believed the words of the first lodestar. We lived in hell itself and were led by our faith to a new land, end quote.
And then Ox says, quote, the cynical squire wisely chooses not to explain to these people the sad reality of their god's demise some 10,000 years before, end quote.
There's a lot of weirdness in the explanation, but we also are kind of dealing with this across the Cosmere, where so many different people, whether they are followers of autonomy who are, you know, the men of red and gold invading Scadrial, or they are the Scadrians who have kind of churned through a couple of different vessels and controllers of those powers. All of these things across the Cosmere, all of these religions across the Cosmere are secondary to what we have to imagine was more the norm in the past of a worship of Ada Nauseam. And so, as you were saying, I'm curious if this was a dormant thing that has always existed, or if it is a new emergence, a kind of remembrance that was brought on by some other action, as if, you know, someone out there said, we need to unite them. And then across the Cosmere, there's a remembrance of when things used to be united. A little bit of chicken and the egg.
Yeah, I mean, my thought would be that this would have to come from somebody from Yolen who survived the shattering. We know that there are clearly still many people who survived the shattering who are originally from Yolen. I guess we don't necessarily know whether or not, for example, the Shodel emigrated from Yolen to other planets before the shattering. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is how they ended up, you know, near Yumi's planet and in the cognitive realm when we see them and all of the other places that they've been popping up these days. But there clearly are Yolenites, Yolinians, roaming the Cosmere. So that would be my biggest guess if it did come from outside the planet. But this group of Canticleites are, as the greater good says, on an eternal pilgrimage. They clearly, in their past, and both their distant past and their recent past, have done a lot of moving around, making new homelands, becoming pilgrims. And it reminded me of the Long Trail.
Yes, which, the Irrealli.
Yeah, we were just talking about in regards to the Irrealli. And I don't know, is it a weird coincidence that we have two different nations that are moving from land to land to land?
I do think that there is some level of coincidence, but I also feel like we have so many examples because this is a Cosmere story. This is something that's, you know, felt universally. Even the 17 original killers of Ada Nauseam begin in one place and then spread out. There's an exodus from that place. Yes, true. They are the superpowered shards, yeah, at this point, and Hoid. But I think that there's always this kind of
expansion.
Yes, a little bit of expansion, exodus. It is also one of the origin stories of the Mormon faith that Brandon is a part of, where those people were constantly pushed out of areas in the eastern United States, mm-hmm, and they had to travel, losing their founder, sure, in a death and a cataclysm, a terrible moment, and then for other people to pick up and continue, yeah, the trail.
Well, and obviously, like, not too long before that were the original pilgrims to North America.
Exactly. And that's, you know, like a follow-up version of, yeah, the pilgrim story, right, is from the perspective of Mormons, people who were, like, you know, continually seeking out that promised land,
yeah,
or that area where you could start anew. And so I think that we feel all of those echoes. Some of those are purposeful. Some of those are, it makes a compelling story.
Sure.
If a group of people is moving from one place to another. But I think Brandon is bringing all of these aspects because it makes a great societal story. It's a compelling argument for why things are the way that they are.
And in this case, it's compounded by the fact that even on Canticle, they continue to move, right? They continue to migrate, now not yearly or every century, but every day, every hour. And so this leads them to be called refugees among refugees. And not only are they seeking refuge from the very nature of the planet and their environment, but they're also trying to seek refuge from the Cinder King.
Yes.
So they're being persecuted in, you know, multiple levels deep.
And what started as an exodus from a planet, you know, trying to get out of that strife and conflict, has only entered them into a never-ending hamster wheel of strife and conflict brought on by the planet itself and the events that we see leading up to the rise of the Cinder King. And we are left with, at the end of the story, a little bit of hope that they have got some breathing room, some, you know, renewable energy resources that can kind of slow down that constant stream and that constant stress that they have likely been under for, at this point, several decades, if not hundreds of years.
Yeah. And the Cinder King is gone. And so I think my dream for the Canticleites is that they are able to unite, or at least have some kind of pact working relationship with the other peaceful tribes on Canticle, and take this beautiful community that we see in the Beaconites and sort of spread that out, and that we can have one shining beacon, forgive the pun, of peace and beautiful community in the Cosmere, because everyone else seems to be going in a bad direction. And I just like the idea that the Canticleites are going to bring that good energy.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great call, because how awkward in some respects would it be that a planet that is so deadly and so difficult
totally
is where the concept, the beacon of peace, emanates from throughout the Cosmere.
Especially if they're able to harness the electricity-like power of the planet and then literally become a beacon. What?
There's a lot of potential, and there's so many interesting things going on with the Canticleites that we see their culture both from the external viewer as Nomad, and then also from Rebecca and...
and the greater good, and even Elegy a little bit.
It gives us an insight into what is going on. And so I want to just kind of like take us through the culture that we see, the technology that we see, and the use of the shades in their technology, all that stuff. Let's just kind of break down a little bit of the Canticle people as we see them in The Sunlit Man.
Great. First, of course, we have just their appearance. They wear clothing very similar to American pilgrims. Their clothing is very conservative and usually includes big hats as well as gloves that they wear all the time, even while eating. I think this is maybe partially due to the sun on Canticle and like wanting to be as least exposed as possible, just in case. But then also, of course, probably partially due to their intense connection with each other that facilitates that exchange of investiture really easily via touch. They are going to want to have themselves as covered as possible so that they're not accidentally passing investiture around.
That is certainly what I find interesting about how we have discussed previously. When you're world building and creating a world, you kind of start with one aspect and you build on top of that aspect. So if the sun is the main reason for their clothing, they might make specific decisions based on that. As you were saying, just like covering up in case they're accidentally exposed. But because the sun's power on this planet is so great that if you're exposed to the sun, it doesn't matter if you're wearing clothes. There's
true.
No clothing
you're
options.
Vaporized.
Yeah, exactly. You're just vaporized. It's not like a, oh, I'll get a sunburn or I won't get a sunburn. It's just death or death. So I think it's actually the second part that you mentioned about their exchange and the easy exchange of investiture, that their clothing options actually comes from the source up rather than the sun down.
Sure,
it's really from this perspective of being able to easily pass investiture from person to person through touch that I think their clothing and cultural decisions were made. I would say for the pilgrims, it's quite the opposite. Like, for the most part, those people just came from like colder environments and had lots of sheep and livestock animals that were used for skins. So it was just kind of like a, yeah, we're wearing thick wool clothing because that's what we have as a resource and it's cold outside. And here we're kind of getting a Rasharan conservative society, but I do think it's because of their easy flow of investiture back and forth.
They also have seemingly never met anyone who speaks a different language from them. When Nomad shows up, there are several comments that are basically, what's wrong with him? Why is he doing that? Is his mouth broken? They only know this homogenous population that they live in.
Yeah. And we have to expect that that's because they all are sourced from a single population that only spoke one language.
Which is just wild, because you would think, as a people who has traveled in between stars, who has traveled from one planet to another, like, you would think that they would intuit that other people have done the same thing. You know, like some kind of knowledge that there are probably other people who speak other languages around.
I think there's an easy explanation of forgetfulness, basically, is that, yes, there were a group of these Threnodites who were traveling and would have been a little bit more aware of the greater Cosmere and other people who are traveling and other languages. But by the time they settle Canticle, and now we're a generation or two beyond that point, nobody has direct experience with space travel. And there's simply a aspect of, what you don't know doesn't hurt you, or what you don't see and aren't exposed to isn't in your mindset.
And I'll say the greater good, so the elder people in their society, do seem to have more understanding or more openness to what Nomad might be. You know, when Nomad first shows up, at least one of them is kind of side-eyeing him like, I think I kind of know what's going on here. I think that you're speaking a different language. I think that maybe you came from somewhere else. There's at least a hint, which, as you're saying, indicates that those who are older, who maybe remember a time before Canticle, or at least were closer to the time that they came to Canticle, have a little bit more knowledge and openness to that.
Interestingly, they have also developed a sleep cycle that is specific to Canticle, or we have to imagine is specific to Canticle, because Nomad says that, quote, it seemed like the entire planet lived on a strange, take hour long naps when you feel like it system, end quote.
Yeah, they don't seem to have any circadian rhythm or regular sleep.
Right. As we would understand it, a normal day-night cycle simply doesn't exist for them. And I think that there are some animals here on Earth that don't have...
that have no pattern at all?
Not that they don't have no pattern at all, but for example, like things that are always living in a cave where it's not light specific, or deep in the ocean where you're just not having a day-night cycle. There are weirder ways of existing, but I certainly haven't heard of any animal or species that is simply taking naps and that creates enough of whatever the stuff that happens during sleep, because we still don't entirely know what happens during sleep for any of us.
We know that it's extremely important, and like, we 100% definitely need sleep, and we need a very specific amount of sleep, but we don't really know why.
And so this is, I believe, an important distinguishing aspect separating Threnodites from Canticleites. I don't think that you could drop a normal person from any other planet on Canticle and then just, you know, in a couple of weeks they'll get used to it. I think that this is a specific difference. Maybe it is investiture influenced in some way.
And it's not, I think we should say, just a function of the fact that days on Canticle are shorter, are different than an average day. Because if that were the case, you would expect that all Canticleites would sleep for whatever, 5 hours or something, you know, half a day every 5 days, right? That's going to add up to basically 25 hours of our time, which is about a day. And then they would sleep for a sort of normal amount of time, and they would all do it in relatively the same cadence. But that's not what happens. So it's clearly not just a function of the fact that their planet is so small.
It is more substantive than that, and more important, because if you have a constant need for movement and the different type of organization with their ships, you need some people who are sleeping and getting, you know, the correct amount of sleep for their society while everybody else is still working and like making sure the ship is flying. You can't have downtimes. You can't have weekends. You can't have, you know, hours where people are just not around because they're sleeping. That simply does not exist in their society.
Yeah, I do wonder how much of this sleep pattern evolved because of the need to be constantly moving.
Yeah, it seems like it would be an example of forced evolution. Just like, you're going to do this in one generation or you will die. And those of you who are not able to do it, I imagine there's some really sleepy grandpa in the first group of people who've arrived on Canticle, and they're just like, I can't do it, man. I need to sleep for a good 8 hours.
And he was the first one that got sacrificed to the sun.
Exactly. Instant sun heart is what we call you. That is the difficulty of Canticle. And I think that's really what we have going on, is just anyone who did not adapt, did not change, was eliminated. They wouldn't have survived long enough, even past like a single day. I would need to sleep. If I showed up on Canticle, I would at some point be able to go 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, whatever. You push me to the limit. But at that limit, I'm going to fall asleep for some huge number of
hours. Multiple hours, yes, not like a 1 hour nap, like they say.
Exactly. So it has to be something different in their
DNA, physiology.
Yeah, or in their spirit web. Something has changed. I'm not against the concept that the planet forces these people to change in some way.
Totally. Yeah. Before we get to the technology that they have access to with the Chorus, let's just touch on some of the more mundane technology, or is it, that they have that Nomad witnesses. They have radios that they use ship to ship, but Nomad says he isn't sure that they're actually using radio waves. It might just be translated that way through his connection, his capital C connection that is translating for him, because that's what he's familiar with. He says, quote, might be some kind of connection-based communication if it was powered by these sun hearts, end quote.
And we also hear that, quote, we don't have the time, the resources, the lives to waste in theorizing, end quote.
And that comes from the greater good as sort of an explanation for why they don't have more technology. They didn't got time.
They're just flying by the seat of their pants. And this concept of connection-based communication, I think, is going to be important for the greater Cosmere, because we need some type of communication system that can, for example, coordinate, you know, Iron Way Station 7 and across the Cosmere, they're talking to Iron Way Station 6 or some other way station. We assume that that has to be a communication style different than normal radio waves, or even, I forget if it's LIDAR or like laser-based wave when they're sending everything by light. Even light across so much distance is taking an extreme amount of time.
Yeah, and if connection-based communication is part of the function of these sun hearts, that is immediately going to make them even more valuable as an export.
Yeah, I'm curious too about what we learn from Rashar with the separation of Spren, like Spren, in different Fabrials. If there's some ability to extend that, you know, beyond the Cosmere, what is that? That's a connection-based communication system, right? It's connection between those Spren.
Yeah, that's interesting. Would that be considered connection-based communication? I don't know.
I mean, what else is connecting them? Pun intended that time. What else is connecting them other than capital C connection?
Two halves of a Spren. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And they're still capital C connected, and that's why the link in the Fabrial machines exists. As far as my understanding goes, let us know if you have any ideas about this.
Yeah, I'm just curious if it would, in fact, be categorized in the exact same way.
I guess this is an opportunity for us to ask Brandon all about what he means by connection-based communication.
Let's dig into some of the myths and beliefs of the Canticleites outside of Ad Nauseam, because they have this myth that gives us the title of the book of the Sunlit Ones.
Quote, long ago, a people existed who could live in the sunlight, people who could take it into themselves rather than be destroyed by it, people who could use it. They were able to stay in one place long enough to build a city beneath the ground. These are the Sunlit Ones. Those who could survive the light, end quote.
What do you think about this myth? Do you think that it is based in reality? Were there actually people like this at some point? Or is it a complete fabrication based on sort of hope by these people living in this violent environment?
I would lean towards the latter. I would say that this is more a hopeful idea rather than something based in myth. Mm-hmm. I think there is often, when it comes to religions, there's both aspects. There's hopeful ideas of the future, and there's also stories that are passed down for generations and then codified in your religious text or whatever it happens to be, that are actually, you know, accurate to something that happened in the past.
Which I think is more the kind of story that we have seen normally, in the Cosmere. Yes. That there is at least a seed of truth in these types of myths. And we talked about this a lot in our series on Hoid's stories and how much of those stories might be based in some kind of reality. I agree with you. I find it hard to believe that anyone would be able to do this on such a violent planet. But I think it's an important thing to keep in the back of our minds. Obviously, we've seen people throughout the Cosmere who can absorb investiture as is described in this passage and use it.
But we would be talking about levels here that are so great that not even a former Dawn Shard holder in Nomad can absorb the light from this particular sun core planet investiture booster, all the stuff that is going on. Even someone who held the Dawn Shard is not able to withstand that. So,
because that investiture is kinetic, which we know is not
absorbable.
Used, basically anywhere as a source of investiture for a human.
So the idea that we would have an entire group of people who are able to specialize and build a city and have that city, you know, exist for a larger number of humans, it just doesn't really jive. But it very much seems like what someone would do if they were building a religion and needed some concept of heaven or hope. And what are we working towards? That certainly seems more akin to what is going on here.
Okay, question for you.
Hit me with it.
Is this a prophecy projecting the future of the Canticleites that we see with their new knowledge about the Sun Hearts? Perhaps this people who could take it into themselves is just referencing their increased ability to use Sun Hearts as tools, and then somehow they're able to like figure out how to better survive on this planet.
Yes, I think that Brandon is doing something interesting with his exploration of time across the Cosmere. But I also want to say that he's clearly not exploring stories in ways where this kind of the prophecy becomes the past to a group of people in the future. And so the prophecy was always the thing in the past. Like the amount of time that Brandon is dealing with here, yes, it can seem expansive. Yes, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can quote unquote learn about what happened on the Cosmere timeline. But for a religion to have a prophecy that then kind of like reiterates itself enough over time that it becomes
the past
yeah. for that. And we were talking about thousands and thousands of years, multiple generations down the road. I don't think that's what we're going to be seeing. But wouldn't it be fascinating if eventually we got to a group of people, a Canticleite people, who are talking about their past when a group of them were able to build a city, and the group that they're talking about is who we just met with right. Nomad, the people who were able to absorb and find this renewable energy. They build the city. They build the they are the sunlit ones, as Rebecca claims to be at right. the end.
Exactly.
She is setting up the aspect of religion in herself. Like, she becomes the sunlit one that everyone in the future is talking about.
Yeah.
It would be fun if things were like that. The amount of time that that would take, I think, is unrealistic to expect in like a follow-up book.
For sure. I'm just throwing out crazy ideas.
I love it. You're taking on my role in this podcast. It's really great to share the love.
Related to this, Contemplation also says that she believes that there are places on Canticle where the ground is solid stone and it does not liquefy and change with the sun, and that those places are the places where these theoretical people could have dug into the earth and created, you know, a little den, a home of some type. And the aspect of this planet that creates the reverence that she feels for solid stone that never changes just reminded me of the Shin and how the Shin worship stone. I don't necessarily think there's actually a connection there. It just sparked in my brain.
I think that's a perfect spark. And this is exactly what we were just talking about, is there's probably something in the past that Contemplation is remembering about the planet itself, like an actual geological change, some type of incredibly dense or hard part of the earth that is not liquefied in the same manner. That could be what I would imagine the original. If I was on the first group with the lodestar circling the planet, I would be taking readings on all of the different areas of the planet and be like, we're going to land here, here, and here, because these make good, solid foundations for us to start a society. Now, we have no idea how their society actually began. They could have crash landed. We don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the type of thing that I would be trying to find out. Where are there resources in the planet? Where are certain things safer or, you know, more dangerous, and we avoid those places? All of this kind of makes sense in my mind is, oh, we're gonna recall or remember these places of stone, and that seems realistic. And then they build on top of that a story about, like, that's where the sunlit ones build their societies.
Would that exist in the poles? Like, would the poles maybe get less sunlight and therefore stay more solid?
I don't want to pretend that I can be an expert on the geology of a fictional planet, but I'm going to say that Canticle is so weird that there's really no easy explanation that we could have of, like, on the poles, this will definitely happen because of these other factors.
Yeah.
There's just too much going on. The planet is not normal. It was created, as we talked about in our last episode. There is not necessarily an easy kind of one-to-one ratio about, like, well, in normal planets, this happens. I don't think that applies to Canticle at all. So anything could be happening anywhere on the planet. Yes, it could be at the poles, or it could be right along the center of the planet for whatever reason.
Yeah, it just seems so unbelievable that they could even have a myth like this when it seems so obvious and so intensely obvious that the entire planet is melting every 5 hours or whatever. And Nomad sort of ascribes this to potentially other world hoppers. And I do actually wonder if some of this myth of a never changing place underneath the earth is maybe a reference to the first coming of the Skadrians. Maybe, maybe not. But here's what Nomad says about their Sunlit Ones myth. Quote, he doubted their lore actually ascribed such specific powers to the hero. These kinds of legends tended to be vague. Too many places had them, and too many, to his chagrin, had been created either by intent or accident by his master. Wit had a habit of starting conversations. End quote.
It certainly would make more sense if there was a Wit-esque person in the distant past that was like, yo, don't come around here. This is my place. This is my area. And that turns into a story of like, oh, that's the land of the Sunlit Ones where we are not allowed to go because it's got, you know, Wit's home base or, you know, extra backup spot.
Or again, just the Skadrians, if someone, you know, as they were flying past one day, happened to see a group of people embedding their research spaceship into mm-hmm. the earth, you know, that would stick with you. And it could be the kind of situation where one person witnessed it and tried to tell people about it. And, you know, no one really believed them. But over time, the story got told enough that it was turned into a myth.
I certainly agree with that. And I think that it's likely, I'm bummed that Brandon said he would be unlikely to write a sequel to The Sunlit Man. But I definitely want to know more about Canticle, what happened in their past and what could happen in their future. Because we also have a bunch of interesting uses, kind of like technological, fabrial, magical uses of the shades, you know, the once upon a time most dangerous thing on the planet of Threnody now seemingly is a 3D printer-esque device yeah. that's just cranking out all of their needed materials.
And we got a little bit of a more specific definition of shades. Quote, Threnodites, they have this phantom echo to their souls, a sort of smoky shadow that lives on after they die, end quote. I don't think we've ever had really an explanation like this of what the shades are, and I find the description as a phantom echo very different and captivating.
It certainly is captivating. I have a possible explanation, but I don't know if in any way it is correct. But this concept of a shade or a shadow of the soul reminds me a little bit of the horrific descriptions after the atomic blasts and Nagasaki and Hiroshima in the Second World War. You have descriptions of people who were standing with like a wall behind them, their shadow of their body is imprinted upon the wall. But then because of the way that the atomic detonation happened, it was basically burning an outline of their body and then completely vaporizing their body. And so the only thing that is left, the only hint of their existence that once was, is nothing physical. It's just this discoloration on the walls where you have the shadow image of a person who now nothing is there in front of like where you would expect to find them. And if there was a cataclysmic explosion in the cognitive realm when a shard was killed, then it might have like sent out a wave that basically everyone that it hit and every, you know, generation created after is left with this shadow version of themselves in the cognitive realm that is not directly tied to them anymore mm-hmm. and is, you know, with them while they are alive, because I do think that's a part of the shades. But then
I mean, I think it's just part of their spirit web.
Exactly. So yeah. Like if their spirit web exists outside of their physical body in some respect, then this like my concept of an explosion creating a shadow version of that, a thing that is able to exist outside of their physical body as well.
Right. So like if a spren is a splinter mm-hmm. or a tiny piece of investiture
right.
from a shard. I mean, when are splinters created? Often during some kind of explosion or cataclysm or impact of some kind. If there was a cognitive realm impact that created a bunch of splinters that sort of went out like shrapnel.
Yes.
And attached themselves to the spirit webs of the Threnodites, just the way that a spren is attached to the spirit web of a person, then maybe that is the explanation for this extra bit of investiture that they have. It doesn't really make sense with why it would be physically genetic, like why it would actually be passed down, really, but maybe.
It definitely falls apart the most when you're talking about multi-generational.
Yeah.
The only concept that I can have is that there is some aspect of like radiation, but in the spirit web, where a mother can conceivably pass on like genetic traits of being near Hiroshima or being exposed to a tremendous amount of radiation can be passed on. Something like that would have to be happening, is basically a trauma was so bad in the past that it sticks not with someone's genetic information, but with their spirit web information.
Right.
And that
which
is
also able
on.
To be transmitted through physical genetics.
Right. I don't think we have enough cosmere geneticists and spiritual realm experts to say that those are directly linked.
Totally.
But that's basically what we're pretending to be now.
Yeah. Lots of speculation there. But Canticleites are a bit different, and I think it's safe to say that the shades, this phenomenon of shades, functions a little bit differently on Canticle. Canticleites only turn into shades, quote, under the right circumstances, end quote. Presumably this means that they turn into shades when they're murdered, or they die of natural causes, or something like that, versus when they are left out into the sun. Obviously, when they're left out in the sun, they become a sunheart. And presumably that extra bit of investiture that would have created a shade is also mushed into the sunheart and is not free to then roam Canticle as a shade.
The shades from Nomad's descriptions sound like this, quote, green eyes, then red when they want to feed. A complete lack of memories, end quote. This concept of a complete lack of memories, I think, is disputed or is, you know, maybe being misunderstood by Nomad, where in Shadows for Silence, we see a little bit of memory held over.
Just a tiny hint at the very end of that story. So it's certainly not fully confirmed, but I think there is a question as to whether or not they really do lack memory.
It sounds to me a little bit like what Vasher is talking about when it comes to Returned, where allegedly there's no memory after you are a Returned. Mm-hmm. He, quote unquote, doesn't remember anything from before he was Vasher.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's also holding that rock as if it holds some memories or is, you know, something important to him from a previous life.
It could have just been important to him in the last 300 years that he's been alive.
It definitely could have been important. But we, at least from Nalthus,
the better piece of evidence for your argument is that we literally see Lightsong remember.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Lightsong has a connection and he's like cheating a bit because he has his brother around in the form of Scoot, who's kind of like reminding but not reminding him, as like trying to play it subtle, but is actually his brother. It would be hard to forget if your brother was sitting in front of you.
But it's just a case study for the fact that it is possible to remember.
And that's what I am saying with the shades too. I think it is possible that they have more memories.
And actually, this is a good point, because the shade that we see maybe remembering things is the shade, I believe it's Silence's mom?
Mother?
Or is it her husband?
I think it's her mother. So it would be the grand...
Who is like, and the shade is living in her home,
yes,
in the presence of her family members, obviously. So similar to Light Song, maybe the presence of those people that it has a connection to,
yes,
capital C connection, facilitates the recovery of those memories or facilitates the ability of that being to maintain some sense of identity.
Mm-hmm.
This might also connect to the lifeless.
Yeah.
Is that definitely what they're called? Yeah, yeah. Nalthus? Because we see Claude, aka Arsteel, also have some kind of retaining of identity and skills from his life before becoming a lifeless.
Yeah, it's not a tabula rasa, a blank slate type of situation, though it's sometimes portrayed that way by people in world.
Right.
And that's what I think we have with these shades, and especially when it comes to the shades that are being used by the people of Canticle, because they're using them in an interesting way.
Yes. Well, and I think that there is a difference. I think that they're similar to how the Threnodites that left Threnody became Canticleites and are now genetically different, mm-hmm, a completely different population, genetically, culturally, etc., from that original group of Threnodites. I think that the shades are the same. Truly, I do not believe that the shades on Canticle are the same as the shades on Threnody. To be fair, maybe things have just changed a whole lot since the last time we saw Threnody, and shades have changed and what they do has changed. But these are shades like we have not seen them previously.
Yeah, so let's call them something different, because this is the chorus from Canticle, and that's the distinguishing factor that we'll use. Seemingly, they were shades in the past, but have now maybe become something different in the chorus.
Yeah, because they do very different things. Firstly, they speak, which we have never seen shades do prior to this. And here is kind of their own definition of what they are and perhaps who they are. Quote, "We were the first who died on Canticle," a shade whispered to him. "The first to live in this land and devise the designs of flight based on the ships that brought us here. But then we died and rose as shades, remembering."
"Shades do not remember," another said. "We are not shades. We are the chorus of the people."
"But others," another said, pressing against the glass, "must be given to the sun. This is the sun's land."
"Do this not," the first said, "and shades will overrun the world. Such a small planet. They will take everything. They would rip and destroy you," end quote.
Very curious.
Very curious.
They say, "We are not shades, but if you do not sacrifice people to the sun, shades will overrun this world." I don't know how those two things are connected. It makes me think that perhaps something about the investiture or the intensity of investiture on this planet is playing a function in the chorus's ability to speak, create things, be somewhat sentient, all qualities and abilities that are very different from shades on Threnody.
Yeah, because they say, "We died and rose as shades, period. Remembering, period." And then the next one comes in and says, "Shades do not remember."
Right.
"And we are not shades."
Yeah.
So the remembering is the key defining thing, that we are shades, but we remember, and therefore we are not shades. The thing that will take over, if left unchecked,
would be shades.
Would be the shades. And so there is some ability to remember that separates shades from not shades. And I think there is something about the creation of sun hearts that allows for remembrance, that allows for the transition of knowledge, of culture, of something. I think that the renewable resource of sun hearts, the passing on of that energy,
mm-hmm,
is significant in a way that we don't understand. It might be the
Because it's not like they're feeding sun hearts to the reliquary, which, mm-hmm, is the tank, basically, that all of the shades or not shades are kept in. we don't see any interaction between the chorus and Sunhearts. So we really have no idea what that connection might be.
We do know that it comes with a mist. The reliquary is like a aquarium, but filled with mist, a heavy, thick mist that is described as light and effulgent. This, of course, reminds me directly of the mist of preservation mm-hmm. that is not a normal mist
right.
and it does not follow the rules of a normal mist. And so it's almost like they are existing in a vat of
power,
some type of shard energy. It's not as far as we know, but that seems like what is keeping them sustained or
yeah, because even more curious about this mist is that the chorus can be transferred to another vessel by transferring some of the mist. So it's almost like a carrier substance for the chorus.
Well, we also see in Yumi a shroud that is enveloping that planet. And from the shroud also comes the bodies of the nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of form nightmares out of the shroud.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that, isn't it?
And so I think that that is probably what's going on, is the mist is actually them. The shades are mm-hmm. of the mist.
And then they sort of choose when to create more body-ish like things and become more differentiated.
More differentiated, like a nightmare can become differentiated.
Yeah.
And over enough time, we know that a nightmare that is constantly capital C connected has an ability to remember themselves mm-hmm. and starts to take back over some control of themselves. It could also be the same with the chorus, is that they're held in a type of like miasma, that any part of that is all of them. And so you can just take a spoonful
right.
and drop it over into a new one, and that contains everything that is them.
Yeah.
And given enough time, given enough capital C connection, they're able to kind of reform themselves as
weird. Yeah, like, does that mean you're essentially duplicating them, or does it create another door for them to go through and appear in a different place, but they can only appear like in one reliquary at a time, you know? Or does it create a copy of them and now you have two of the same shade in different reliquaries?
That's an interesting question. We don't have an answer, but I would say that it's probably closer to the door description.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That basically, we saw with Kelsier when he was a cognitive shadow, there were some places and some people who were more able to interact with him
mm-hmm.
and that there were certain places like the Well of Ascension where all three realms are able to be transitioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would see the reliquary as a mini Well of Ascension, a place where the chorus can kind of cross more easily into the physical realm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a perpendicularity.
No,
it's
neither
just
do
where,
I.
Wherever their mist is, it sort of creates a pathway for them to appear in the physical realm.
That's how I would understand or explain it.
Let's read this description of their physical appearance, because I think this is also different from the shades that we see on Threnody. Quote, "A face formed from mists and pressed up against the glass, eyes glowing red, hands made of smoke slamming against the barrier. It had a gaunt face with a drooping jaw and sunken cheeks," end quote. I don't remember specific faces like this being described from the shades on Threnody. To me, I just remember them almost being like ghosts that sort of have a vague human shape, but not a face. What do you remember?
I would echo that completely. Definitely more ghost-like and a non-corporeal form and just kind of like a vague, terrifying presence more than any specific face with features, you know, certainly nothing like a jaw that is distinguished from that face.
Right. Basically just a Halloween ghost with the eyeballs. Just
yes,
like
100%.
Eye holes, floaty thing.
Like Casper the ghost is too defined for yes. what I think a shade is.
Totally.
It's just, oh, the little ghost from Pac-Man.
Yeah, Pac-Man.
That's all shades are. They're just coming after you and you're munching away just hoping to avoid them.
And so the chorus, it seems, is also able to make more defined bodies. And that is not the only thing that they're able to make, because their biggest function within the society of the Canticleites is the fabrication of objects, of seemingly anything. As long as they're given raw materials and a schematic, they just build stuff.
Yes, this is definitely one of the most unique aspects of the shades that we have seen.
They're a 3D printer.
They are a 3D printer. They are given a schematic, they're given raw materials, and from that, they can create the flying machines, they can create completely new designs based on Sigil's descriptions. They don't necessarily need to have experience with the creation, so you could have anyone show up with the schematic from off-world or anything else, and they should just be able to print that out as it is, as if it is a computer.
I think someone does say that they are faster.
Yes.
If they have done the design before, but yeah, they can build completely new things as they do with Nomad's design. When Nomad gives them his schematic, the chorus is said to be given at the same time copper, iron, and a variety of other metals. And obviously, when we see specific metals called out, we notice this in the Cosmere.
Certainly, both copper and iron have their specific tie-ins and their specific uses in Fabrials. And so, are the Chorus simply the greatest Fabrial makers in the Cosmere? Are they putting Navani to shame out here with or are they the end result of something like many generations of Fabrial makers? I just, you know, it is mind-boggling to try to put together all of these pieces from the couple of different puzzle pieces that we have been given. We haven't been given the whole picture, and right. we're trying to like find a way that all of these things can fit together.
Auxiliary thinks that this is more similar to the way that a spren can manifest as metal. He says, quote, "I think they're building it like I build things from myself," Auxiliary said. "You've seen this before. You use it every day, Nomad."
You don't absorb raw materials and spit out permanent devices, end quote.
That phrase, permanent devices, reminded me of what Yumi helps the spirits do on Kamashi. I guess those devices are not always permanent. They can last for some duration of time, possibly up to years. I think that they are not technically permanent, but it reminded me a little bit of that. However, I don't get the impression that the Chorus is putting themselves into their creations, because they must have the materials supplied for them, you know?
Right.
It's not like you give them a schematic and then out of nowhere they pop out an engine, in the same way that out of nowhere Auxiliary can create a spear.
Exactly. I think Auxiliary is kind of sacrificing himself, his body, for the creation of something physical. And then as soon as he wants that body back, the object disappears, whereas the Chorus is creating things that are completely detached from themselves because they're just the raw materials organized in a specific way. So we should probably see the mechanism of creation as similar.
So are they manipulating axial connection and like on a molecular atomic level, breaking these things apart and then using the atoms to build new things?
That's what I think needs to be happening. Whoa. Either they're doing that at the atomic level, or they're doing that like two levels above the atomic level.
Sure.
But they're definitely taking raw materials and organizing them into finished products without any type of machinery. So like, yeah, we could pretend that we know the exact point where they begin, but let's just say, like, yeah, they're breaking this all down to the atomic level, and then they're rearranging things as they see fit. So clearly this is more advanced technology than we've seen throughout the Cosmere created by any people. It's definitely more advanced than anything that humans have on Earth. It is some type of understanding of the way that things work together. You have to, even if you have schematics, you have to kind of understand how the materials will blend and shape together. And that, I think, is what the Chorus is bringing. They have some innate understanding of the universe, maybe because of what they are as the Chorus, as shades that remember, but they are kind of like able to see how things work together.
Well, and then they're also able to change shape, you know, without any tool to soften the metal and to bend it into different shapes, to break it apart and create different things. So they kind of have to be doing it on like an atomic level.
Maybe of important note is that the Chorus could be doing this with song, could be doing this with a Rasharan-esque influence.
That's interesting. Yeah, we know that vibrations, wavelengths are important in the Cosmere. Could they be using the vibration of Canticle, the tone of Canticle, to manipulate these things? Because, of course, their name goes along with the musical naming convention of the Threnodyte system that we spoke about previously. And the Chorus, of course, is also the group that sings the songs, and that ties into their role as historians. They're remembering. So are they vibrating? Are they singing at a specific frequency that gives them these abilities?
That's what I am beginning to think is going on, especially after we see things like plants being supported in their growth. It's not quite like molecularly changing around the plants.
On Canticle?
On Rashar, sorry. On Rashar, we see that songs are able to like influence the growth of plants,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And kind of encourage them to grow in a more robust fashion than they otherwise would. To me, that's kind of similar to what's going on. You're encouraging the metal to be in a different shape, to be in a different form. And it's just if you know the right songs, you can do quite a bit. Right now, our friends on Rashar know very few songs. But what if they became experts in that specific field? Would they eventually have the ability to completely rearrange raw materials into finished products via song, kind of similar to how the singers change forms? They're able to literally rearrange some aspect of their molecular makeup so that they become bigger, stronger, fat, or they grow new organs, all that jazz. Is that what is able to happen with the Chorus?
So interesting.
It certainly has given us a bunch to think about, and because Brandon wrote The Sunlit Man with the greater Cosmere in mind.
With intention.
Yes, the intent is always key. He is introducing all of these different aspects for specific reasons. We don't necessarily think we'll get a direct sequel to The Sunlit Man, but I would expect each of these little tidbits that we learn to be impactful and influential throughout the rest of the Cosmere.
To tie this all back in to the very beginning of this episode and the exodus of the Threnodytes, let's end with this quote from the Chorus. Quote, "We fled the evil," the ghost said in a whispering voice like rustling papers. Another appeared over its shoulder, just a vague, smoky outline of a person with red eyes. "Then we fled Threnody. We are your Chorus. We remember. We came here to the land of the Twilight Rings to make our own world. Do not forget, Adonalsium will claim us eventually. Live and remember," end quote.
To live and remember, to pass on the stories, to pass on the myths and the legends of people like Nomad, and to make new legends like the Sunlit Ones are going to do on Canticle. It's been an exciting series of secret projects, but I certainly think that the Sunlit Man leaves us with the most to chew on and the most to return to, especially when it comes to how are these different forms of investiture, these different spren, these different shades, how are they all interacting and what are they capable of? Because it seems like we don't know that much, and we think that we are so well informed after many years in the Cosmere and kind of getting exposed to all of these concepts. And then Brandon comes in and mixes that up all around, and we're left afloat. We're left to wonder again and try to piece together the new information that we have realized has been happening this whole time. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Thank you for returning to this book club series. We've got one more episode of the Sunlit Man book club, so tune in next time for that.
It'll be all about, of course, the Cosmere connections. We're talking about the Night Brigade. We're talking about the Skadrians. All of those intriguing topics that you've been waiting for will be in our next episode. And until next time, life before death.
Strength before weakness.
Journey before destination.